I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Hi, boys. Hi, everybody. Welcome into Spare Change, part of Stack and Pennies, presented by Mobile One. You got Corey LaJoy down there in beautiful, sunny Talladega, Ryan Flores, Danielle Trotta. Woo! A lot going on down there on the track today. You want to start with cup or trucks? Because it was spicy.
Well, I laid down a heater of a second to last fastest lap in Cup Series qualifying, so we got them all where we want them, all out front tomorrow. Not super enthused with that lap, to be honest. I wish we had a little more raw speed in our car, but not the case. So it's going to be an uphill battle for us tomorrow. And I really worked for like 2.5 minutes. That was a hard day's work. And obviously we have a lot to cover in that truck race because I still feel like they're finishing up after all. They didn't trash them all. They figure like you give them 3 or 4 more laps, I think that he got all of them. And we had fights in the pits. And we had Jensen took a tumble on the playground, so we were in the infield care center. So it's been an exciting day, even though we've just qualified here at Talladega.
Well, first things first, how's baby Jensen? Is he all right?
He is good. He was sitting on the park bench, fell off of it, hit his noggin. I believe the concrete took more damage in the back of his head. So Kelly took him to the infield care center. They looked at him for about an hour, and He waddled his way out of the infield care center, and he's good to go. So
were you in the infield care center when all the chaos was going on? Nick Sanchez came in after getting punched in the face.
Just missed it. I saw the blood on the ground.
Should have been our inside correspondence.
I just missed it by like 10 minutes.
Should have had a follow-up visit. Hey, I'm going back.
Well, I saw my man Nick walking out, backpack on, changed. Eyebrows busted up. Had some Elmer's glue holding that thing together like you're in fourth grade.
Looking more like Diego Sanchez after a UFC fight.
Yeah. Looking like Diego Sanchez. I said, bro, get some ice on that thing. It's going to be black and blue. And he says, hey, good luck tomorrow. I said, thanks. I'm going to need it. Wild. Matt Crafton, the old squirrely vet, had enough of the young kids coming there and causing a pileup. I don't know.
Corey, you ever been so pissed that you just park your car in someone else's pit and walk off?
I can neither confirm nor deny that. There's a story about the Snowball Derby one time that my car inadvertently got parked, and some guy, what was his name? Ryan, help me.
I don't know. He's from Canada. He just
I knew
I didn't know why we were fighting. Why are we fighting? What happened? You didn't say anything.
So I broke a drive shaft in a Snowball Derby. I came to rest almost getting on the pit road, but like 4 or 5 car lengths away with like 4 feet in between my window, my door, and the guardrail. And I got my belts off and I'm taking my Hans off. Obviously our day's done. And some son of a is looking down at his dash, grabbing his water bottle, God knows what he's doing, and stuffs it, wedges his car in between at like 30 miles an hour in between my car and the guardrail. Like, burr, burr, burr. I said, what is this son of a doing? It just made me so mad to like for this guy to not paying attention to try to either fit his car in between mine and the guardrail or just wasn't paying attention at all. So he came to rest side by side with me and kind of up on the guardrail. And I got out of my window and I started walking across his hood, and I didn't want to just walk across his hood and not like inflict any damage. So I found where his airbox was underneath my feet, and I started jumping up and down until I felt it broke, until I felt it break in half, and then I got off, and I felt like my job was completed.
No, you didn't, because they were parked next to us on pit road. So they were in there working on the car, and Corey walks back to our pit box and proceeds to yell at the guy and almost fight the guy while they're working on his car on pit road. And none of us, because he was out of the car at the time, had any freaking clue what was going on. So he's like wanting to fight this guy, but we just broke. So we're like, what this guy weld the drive shaft of this thing? What's going on? What are we doing?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like an hour later.
I don't know if Sanchez's crew, if like that's what started it, because they were not happy. I've seen it, like we're all watching it. Everyone's trying to find all the replays. Front stretch got a ton of stuff. I honestly, like I saw someone, front stretch is reporting NASCAR says they're gathering all info regarding the altercation between Matt, Nick, and others, and will review before making a ruling later in the week.
I've heard two sides of the story already. We're not even an hour removed.
Let's hear.
You've heard Nick's post infield care center story, right? I was walking, minding my own business, got tapped on the shoulder, turned around, got knuckled to the face, got served a knuckle sandwich on a silver platter. I heard another side of the story, not from maybe a valuable source necessarily, said there was words exchanged and some comments said back and forth, and then came the fist. So the truth probably lies somewhere in between. And there's no video, so I guess we're never going to truly know. But NASCAR's going to get to the bottom.
Well, then in the melee where there's like just a bunch of people and Nick screaming, I can't find Crafton in that part of the mix. So maybe those were some of the crew guys. But the part you're talking about where apparently Matt broke Nick says he has a broken nose. No one has that part on video. So
Nick says Matt has a broken nose, or Nick
I'm
says
sorry. That? Nick says he has himself. Has a,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh man,
I just don't.
Bad look for both of them, I think.
That's what I was about to say. It's just not a good look. Grown men punching each other.
I like Matt Crafton, right? And if you're on the track, and you're fair game, right? But a 47-year-old man punching a 22-year-old guy is not a great look in my eyes. If you did it, I don't understand watching the video, kind of, if that was a punchable offense, but I don't understand what had gone on all year, right? Like, it just kind of looked like a super speedway racing incident. If I was at Martinsville and someone turned me backwards and I got piled into, it might be different. Super speedway racing, I would say if I was driving, I'd have it built in to know, like, okay, this might happen to me, but if there's stuff that boiled over, I can't say that I watched it closely enough. I just don't think that it was a good look for either of them. Nick Sanchez has had a lot going for him. He's had pace all year. And this is quite literally and figuratively, I'd say, a black eye for his career because he's a pretty quiet kid. And yeah, Matt Crafton. I mean, Matt Crafton's in his like all like fresh out of part of his career.
Zero.
You know,
given.
47 years old, race, you know, like whatever, man. I might punch a kid today. So.
Well. Charles Plank, I don't think, meant to choose violence, but is he a candidate? He's got to be. Early dog of the week. That was the other part of the truck race. Everybody's talking about Zane Smith pulls into the pits, almost takes his tire carrier out. Dog.
Oh, he took him out. Yeah, he's lucky. You know, if there's nothing crazy that happens tomorrow, and hopefully there's not, hopefully it's a pretty easy day on pit road, which I'm sure there will be tons of calamity down there, but he's definitely the early candidate for dog of the week. It seems to happen.
Oh, dog.
That was crazy.
Thank God he got it, dude. Hero and a half shell. Key, if you watch his face, he's lucky he's got a beard. Because if he didn't have a beard, his face would have been. You would see a spoiler mark across his face. Because his half shell and his head sock ain't protecting him from 120 aluminum. Spoiler to the face.
Moving at 15 miles an hour.
But if he had a full face helmet on, like a grown adult, he wouldn't have to worry about that. But no, yeah, that's a big deal. And man, it just goes to show you how hard he got hit. It took Zane damn near out of the race, you know. So with the damage that got put on that. But yeah, that's the job, right? You go, if you have a bad day at work, you could end up on SportsCenter.
Yeah. I mean,
or you could be a dog of the week. Maybe we'll have to see.
They're like, what do you think was going to happen? He's like, I tried to clear it and I almost did. Dang.
I've had that happen to me at Daytona. I was pitting for Michael McDowell in 95 car and he spun out like that same exact way getting in the box, but it was still six man. So the tire carrier didn't have two tires. So like we were able to heat the tire carrier still got hit, but the tire carrier was the most vulnerable in that position, especially with the way we do it now, like five-man pit stops, because the tire carrier goes out in front of the changer, in between the changer and the jackman, but the jackman can kind of stop because he doesn't have as much weight. You know, the carrier's carrying 90 pounds of tires. So, yeah. One, good on him for getting back up, finishing the race. And two, thank God those tires didn't get lost.
Yeah, he was carrying two.
Pit box somewhere, so.
I was like, woo, dropped one, kept it moving. They went to his pit on Fox. He was like, I'm good, let's roll. Dog material. Charles Plank.
Dog material.
Can't be a cat. You can't be a cat if you want to do this job. Gotta be dog.
All right, Core. Tomorrow, what do you think about Cup? So, doesn't surprise me, but for the top five qualifiers are Fords. Eric Almirola's on the pole. Joey Logano outside. Couple playoff guys buried a little deep. We can talk about that. But what do you think of Ford's strength? To me, it's just, I mean, it's same old, like, but Chevrolets have won the last, what, three straight super speedway races? So we'll see.
Yeah, I think that Fords generally have the most speed at a speedway, whether it's qualifying at Atlanta, Daytona, Talladega. They generally occupy a lot of the top 10 positions. And I feel like Chevy executes as an entire organization better, particularly key partners, right? Like, we don't get invited to the meetings. We have our own friends that we kind of figure out our own pit strategy, but those eight key partner Chevy teams are pretty well married to each other all day and stick to their guns, and that's how they generally cycle just strength and numbers in front of those Fords. But Fords have controlled the race. I feel like this is going to be a track position race more so than any other speedway we've been to. So you look at the Penske cars, obviously trying to get that 12 to the next round is going to be the number one priority, and they're going to be working together with the 22 to get that two, get or the 12, get that track position and maintain it all day. They're going to be hard to beat once they get in control of the day and control the lanes, and you can block a third lane from coming. So if you don't have track position for a guy like me, it's going to be a long day to try to get it without getting crafty or getting lucky, just because everybody knows how hard it is to pass. You just can't drive from 20th to third anymore. It's just not how it works. So I don't anticipate a lot of crashes. NASCAR told the team. So one of the talking points from qualifying was the crab walking, the backwards left rear out, when there wasn't really any rules on where you could run your rear geometry. So some teams worked on it and really figured it out. NASCAR told you where your pickup points had to be this race. So it's taken a lot of that crab walking out. And I feel like that's going to allow the cars to drive better overall. So you're going to see less cars out of shape and hopefully less wrecks. I don't know. Fans like to see wrecks. I like to see wrecks too, because that's usually that's the easiest way to get spots. But I don't anticipate seeing huge pileups like we're accustomed to seeing at Talladega tomorrow or today.
If it's going to happen, I feel like, Ryan, what we've seen is, and we've talked to a couple team guys this week, Denny anticipates, you know, we've seen this before, especially in the postseason. The end of stages, no one means to do it, right? You never want to be in it, but you're going for those stage points. Maybe not the end of stage one will get crazy, but the end of stage two, and that's kind of when we've seen it.
Yeah, I think both stages are super important. And you look at, like, what happened to us at Daytona when we were just there for the finale of the regular season. We're leading the race, coming back to take the green checkered, you know, going to win the stage. Everything's happy. Everybody's honky-dory. And then all of a sudden, one bad push from the 20 to the 54, and we're firewall deep in the fence. So I've always said that, you know, going out front and leading is the safest route. But even that at Daytona got us in trouble. And with as valuable as stage points are, especially in the round of eight, to guys like Bubba Wallace, Tyler Reddick, us, the eight car, the five car, I think that's where desperation, you know, will prevail, because 20 stage points in the first two stages can change the trajectory of your season. So yeah, I don't know if the calamity starts early and lasts all day or if it doesn't.
I think we're going to see a lot of green flag runs, and
yeah,
GM gives out the pre-race report, and the question's always is our chances of crashing lower if we are up front or lower if we fall to the back. So they have done a pretty intensive survey of positions involved in incidents, and it's legitimately a bell curve. So if you are it's like first through 40 on the x-axis, probability of getting crashed on the y. It's literally for the first four or five, your position of getting percentage of getting crashed is like less than 10%. As you go towards 13th to 15th, 15th is where the peak of that bell is, and your chance of getting crashed is like 100. And then as you go down, obviously last place, your odds of getting crashed is pretty low as well. So you do not want to be from 12th to 18th. That's like the danger zone of where if there is a crash that's going to happen, you are going to be in it.
Is there anywhere else that peaks? That's like just a random spot, like 31st. Oh, boink. Don't be there.
I mean, they're like, it's higher like in the last three or four than you would expect to, right? Like falling off or somebody blowing a tire or something like that. But
man, that's interesting.
I feel like that's where Denny's going to be. And I don't think he's shy about it. And I don't really think he cares what he's supposed to do. Plus, he's 32, 37 above the cut. I think Denny's going to be in the back, like first two stages, just riding.
Yeah. Man, I think Denny, you know, Denny's got plus 37 too, right? So he could even have an issue here and still feel decent about going to the Roval. The one that he qualified in top five, but the one that I'll be intrigued to see how his day goes is the five car, notably not extremely pumped about speedway racing, vocally doesn't like it, doesn't have a ton of success doing it, and the same goes with the 19. So I'll be interested to see how those two do tomorrow.
Yeah. Larson's only two above the cut. Truex is 19 above the cut. Those are the two I think a lot of people keep their eye on. Kyle Busch, right now he's at the bottom, minus 7.
He won the last race here, didn't he?
Yeah, he won it earlier this year. Qualified 25th. I got my eye on, Corey always asks, who's our pick? I got my eye on BK. Going into the weekend, I said it before qualifying. How'd you think the six look?
I like that pick. And he even comes with a little confidence, a little fire suit walk. Says he feels like they're due. And there's nobody in the field that knows how to find their way to victory lane at Talladega better than Brad Keselowski. So I like that pick. I don't feel like he's going to be the priority within the Ford camp, though. So might be misinformed. Is he still in the playoffs?
Brad, yeah. He's in the good. Plus eight or six.
Right. So I feel like trying to get the 12 into it to just keep a Chevy out or a Toyota out is the intention and what's being talked about in those four meetings. So I'm going to go on a limb and just say strength in numbers and overall speed. Ford has the upper hand this weekend. I feel like Blaney's going to be a strong one. Gets his ticket first around eight.
Music to your ears, Flores.
I think it's a – I think it's a business trip for us, and that's the plan, is to go there and just win the race, right? That's the only goal, is to score max stage points and then win the race. If nothing else, you know, leave there with as many points as we can. But we don't want to go as poor as the road course program has been in the Penske camp this year. You don't want to go to Roval with a question mark or being close to the cutoff line. So, I think the only objective tomorrow is to win the race. And I would go with us too. And if I wasn't going to go with us, I think the 10 car would be, you know, I know he's on the pole, but Stuart Haas is desperate. They need a win. They haven't won this year. A lot going on over in that camp. So if it's going to be another Ford, I think it might be the 10.
Well, strategy, Flores, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think what we've seen in the past is if it's the green flag runs like this, when you pit at your fuel window at the end of the race, it's usually the guy in the lead that's at the biggest deficit because they can't save fuel. So you see the guy that's leading the train down pit road kind of get jumped because they have to take an extra second or so of fuel because they've burned more. So that'll be the game. I think tomorrow is leading, but being able to save or staying in striking distance. And you're not going to win it on pit road, but you sure as hell can lose it there. So get them tight, get them right. Don't have to come back down.
Sounds like a plan. LaJoy, behave yourself. No boulevard trips for you tonight, my friend.
I'll be tucked in bed. I'll be listening to those boys. I'll be turned up, having a good time. But we got 500 miles for the belts to be tight. See if we can't put our Cambridge Camaro in the mix.
Love it. Something else I love, every race the rest of the year, race fans, on the big network, NBC, tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That is Sunday. Corey, good luck and Godspeed, my friend. Go get them.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Gus.
Flores, you too, buddy.
I appreciate that.
This is Spare Change for Stacking Pennies. Enjoy the race, everybody, presented by Mobile One.